The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. First up from the ACB at acb.org. Tell Congress to pass the Websites and Software Applications Accessibility Act. We now have a campaign link to tell Congress to pass the Websites and Software Applications Accessibility Act. We were all excited when Congress reintroduced H.R. 3417. Let's now use our voices to tell Congress to pass the bill. Please use the link below to reach out to our representatives. https://speak.4.app/LP/0801FS6X/query TS=175857277.4. When I follow that link, I get Tell Congress to pass the Website and Software Applications Accessibility Act. The Americans with Disabilities Act was passed in a time before websites and applications were what they are today. As a result, coverage of such technology by the law is often debated and difficult to enforce. People with disabilities regularly have difficulty in using websites because the design of the website does not interact well with assistive technology. However, if a website is designed properly, it is easy to make a website accessible for all people. The Website and Software Applications Accessibility Act calls on Congress to ensure that websites and applications are made accessible for all users. The bill calls for the development of standards by the applicable governmental agencies to make websites accessible for people with disabilities. The bill uses a functional definition of accessibility to keep up with the ever-evolving world of technology. It also includes the development of technical assistance to implement the standards. And yes, the bill does include language that will hold the original creator of the website liable. Website templates are often designed by a third party and sold to smaller third-party users. From journals.sagepub.com, Adapted Picture Exchange Communication System, PECS, to teach tangible symbol use to students with multiple disabilities and visual impairments. A replication study by Sarah E. Ivey, Paige Furbush, that's P-A-I-G-E-F-U-R-B-U-S-H, Meredith J. Karppinen, that's K-A-R-P-P-I-N-E-N, and Susan S. Johnston, 2025. Introduction. Learners with multiple disabilities and visual impairments, for instance, blindness or low vision, stand to benefit from accessible, augmentative, and alternative communication, such as tangible symbols, but currently no evidence-based practices exist to guide intervention decisions. This study is a replication of previous research on Phase 1 of the Picture Exchange Communication System, PECS, adapted to teach students with multiple disabilities to exchange a tangible symbol for a preferred item. Methods: a multiple probe, single case research design was used with 3 participants. Data were also collected to assess generalization, maintenance, and social validity. Results of functional relation was observed, and all 3 participants achieved mastery criteria within 7 to 15 sessions. Although limited, generalization and maintenance data were promising. Social validity data showed families and professionals alike generally perceived the procedures and outcomes positively. Discussion. Results contribute to the growing body of evidence that adapted PECS Phase 1 is effective to teach students with multiple disabilities to use tangible symbols for basic requesting. Length of time to attain mastery criterion was longer for participants who were non-ambulatory. Implications for practitioners. Practitioners should use efficiency data to plan for adequate time to support skill development, which will require collaboration and embedding opportunities into natural routines. References: Ali E. McFarland, S.Z., Umbreit, UMBREITJ, 2011. Effectiveness of combining tangible symbols with the picture exchange communication system to teach requesting skills to children with multiple disabilities, including visual impairment. Education and Training in Autism and Developmental Disabilities, Volume 46, Issue 3, pages 425 to 435. I'm not going to read all the websites for these. American Printing House for the Blind, No Date, Tactile Connections, Symbols for Communication. That website has a link as well. Buechelman D. Light J. That's Buechelman, B-E-U-K-E-L-M-A-N, 2020. Augmentative and Alternative Communication, Supporting Children and Adults with Complex Communication Needs, 5th edition, Paul H. Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-E-S. Bracken M. Rohrer N., B-R-O-H-E-R, 2014, using an adapted form of the picture exchange communication system to increase independent requesting in deafblind students with learning disabilities. Research in Developmental Disabilities, Volume 35, Issue 2, pages 269 to 277. There's a hot link for that website. Bruce S., 2005. The Impact of Congenital Deafblindness on the Struggle to Symbolism, International Journal of Disability Development and Education, Volume 32, Issue 3, 233 to 251, and a hot link for that. Bruce S., IVS, Brum C., that's B-R-U-M, 2024, Severe and Multiple Disabilities, in Kaufman J., M., Hollihan D., P., Pullen P. C., Editors, The Handbook of Special Education, 3rd edition, pages 327 to 359, published by Routledge. Frost L. Bondi A., 2002, The Picture Exchange Communication System Training Manual, 2nd edition, Pyramid Educational Consultants. Hume K., Steinbrenner J.R., Odom S.L., Morin K.L., Nowell S.W., Tomaszewski, that's T-O-M-A-S-Z-E-W-S-K-I-B, Zenedry, that's S-Z-E-N-D-R-E-Y-S, McIntyre N., Yushisoy Oshken S., that's Y U umlaut C E S O Y dash O umlaut Z K C A N. Savage M N 2021. Evidence based practices for children, youth, and young adults with autism. Third generation review. Journal of Autism and Developmental Disorders. Volume 51, Issue 11, 413 to 4032. That's 4013 to 4032. There's a hot link for that. IVSE Hatton DD Hooper JD 2014. Using the Picture Exchange Communication System with Students with Visual Impairment. Exceptional Children, Volume 80, Issue 4, pages 474 to 488. IVS Hanline MF Robbins A 2024. Teaming to Design Tangible Symbol Communication Systems for Children with Multiple Disabilities, Young Exceptional Children, Volume 27, Issue 2, pages 63 to 77. IVS Robbins A. Carr MG, that's K-E-R-R, 2020. Adapted Picture Exchange Communication System using Tangible Symbols for Young Learners with Significant Multiple Disabilities. Augmentative and Alternative Communication, Volume 36, Issue 3, pages 166 to 178. Ledford, J.R., Gast, G-A-S-T-D-L, Editors, 2018. Single Case Research Methodology, Applications in Special Education and Behavioral Sciences, 3rd edition, Routledge. Lund, S.K., Troha, J.M., 2008. Teaching young people who are blind and have autism to make requests using a variation on the picture exchange communication system with tactile symbols. A preliminary investigation. Journal of Autism and Developmental Disorders, Volume 38, Issue 4, pages 719 to 730. Parker AT 2009 Measuring an Adapted Form of Picture Exchange Communication Systems PECS for Young Children with Visual Impairments and Developmental Disabilities, doctoral dissertation, Texas Tech University. Parker AT Banda DR Davidson RC Liu-Gitz, that's LIU-GITZ 2010 Adapting the Picture Exchange Communication System for a Student with Visual Impairment and Autism, a Case Study. Insight, Volume 3, Issue 1, pages 2 to 11. Parker A. and IVS, 2014, Communication Development of Children with Visual Impairments, a Synthesis of Intervention Research, International Review of Research and Developmental Disabilities, Current Issues in the Education of Students with Visual Impairments, Volume 46, pages 101 to 143. Robbins A., IVS, 2024, February 15 to 17. Scoping Review of AAC Interventions. Considerations for VI/DHH/Motor Disabilities. Poster Session. Conference on Research Innovations in Early Intervention, San Diego, California, USA. Roche, Sigafoos J., Lancioni, GE, O'Reilly, MF, Green, VA, Sutherland, D, Van Detmeer, that's M-E-E-R, Schlosser, R-W, Marschik, P-B, Edrisinha, that's E-D-R-I-S-I-N-H-A, C-D, 2014, Tangible Symbols as an AAC Option for Individuals with Developmental Disabilities, a Systematic Review of Intervention Studies, Augmentative and Alternative Communication, Volume 30, Issue 1, pages 28 to 39. Treif, E, that's spelled T-R-I-E-F, Casella, P-W, that's spelled C-A-S-C-E-L-L-A, and Bruce, S-B, 2013. A Field Study of a Standardized Tangible Symbol System for Learners Who Are Visually Impaired and Have Multiple Disabilities. Journal of Visual Impairment and Blindness, Volume 107, Issue 3, pages 180 to 191. And finally, Zhang Y and Zhang J and Zhang J, Sutherland M. and Huang S., 2023, Teaching Requesting Skills to Children with Visual Impairment and Intellectual Disability by Using Picture Exchange Communication System Combined with Tangible Symbols, International Journal of Disability, Development and Education, Volume 71, Issue 7, pages 1152 to 1172. And there are websites for many of those citations, but not all of them. From NFB.org, welcome to Blind Cricket, a rising phenomenon. American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults, Future Reflections, Summer 2025, Breaking New Ground, by A.B. Finkley, that's A-B-E-Y-F-I-N-K-L-E-A. From the editor, when I met A.B. Finkley at the 2025 Midwest Student Seminar in Chicago, I had never heard of the adaptive sport called blind cricket. A.B.'s enthusiasm was contagious, and I invited her to share her story with the readers of Future Reflections. She eagerly seized this opportunity to spread the word about this exciting new opportunity for blind athletes. Less than a year ago, in the fall of 2024, there was not a whisper about competitive blind cricket in the United States. Yet somehow, in the fall of 2025, the national U.S. women's blind cricket team will travel to India to compete in history's very first Women's Blind Cricket World Cup Championship. For any sport to grow so quickly is remarkable. It's all the more amazing when the sport is blind cricket, which is nearly unknown only months ago. Gathering momentum. Although cricket is the second most popular sport globally, falling just behind soccer, it is not commonly played in the United States. Despite this challenge, blind cricket has gained a strong foothold in the U.S. in the past year. For the first time in blind sports history, this U.S. blind sport is growing up alongside its mainstream counterpart, rather than waiting for the mainstream sport to become deeply established in U.S. sports culture. Furthermore, the women's team is being built up first, whereas typically, women's blind sports don't develop until long after the men's sport has taken root. The seeds for U.S. blind cricket were sown in July of 2024 when the Cricket Association for the Blind in India provided a blind cricket demonstration at the NFB National Convention in Orlando, Florida. At the time, blind cricket was completely off my radar. Although I was aware of the mainstream cricket as a sport, I knew almost nothing about the game. I never guessed that attending the blind cricket demo at convention would completely turn my world upside down, dropping me into international adaptive sports and a whole new life abroad. It might seem overly dramatic to make such a claim, but as you read, I'm sure you'll come to see just how profoundly my life changed because of cricket. My initial attraction to the NFB Blind Cricket event stemmed from my interest in traveling to India, and the sports aspect was only a secondary motive. Of course, I was eager to try the sport, but most importantly, I wanted to explore options for volunteering in India. I saw the event as an opportunity to network with India's Cricket Association for the Blind. That was the extent of my expectation when I arrived at the event. Yet, by the time I left an hour later, I found myself agreeing to help establish blind cricket in the United States. More importantly, I had received an invitation from the organization's founder, Dr. Mahantesh, to travel to Bangalore, India for 1 month to learn cricket. A journey to India. Although my brother Drew was not with me at the blind cricket event, the instant I told him I was traveling to India, he was eager and ready to leave with me. I had met India's Cricket Association for the Blind right at the beginning of its U.S. tour in early July. By the time the group headed back to India in late September, Drew and I had our visas approved and our tickets booked. We were set to arrive in early October. We were warned to expect severe culture shock when entering southern India, but we slid right into our new lifestyle. We fell in love with the languages, the people, and the culture of Bangalore. Upon arrival in India, I knew only the most basic information about how blind cricket is played. I had experienced the adapted ball, which is similar in size to a standard cricket ball or baseball, and filled with small metal ball bearings that rattle loudly. Unlike the traditional leather ball used in mainstream cricket and American baseball, the blind cricket ball is white and made of hard plastic. I had also experienced the bat used in blind cricket, which is nothing at all like a baseball bat. It is made of wood, and one end is wide and flat, somewhat resembling an oar or a paddle. I had only the most basic understanding of the game. I knew that one person throws the adapted ball toward the batsman, and the batsman must hit the ball. Beyond that, I was hopelessly lost. From day one, my life in India revolved around cricket. During my first week, I attended a training camp of 25 women in Karnataka State. While my fellow cricketers lived in a group hostel for the week, I walked from Dr. Mahantesh's house and joined the group first thing each morning. I arrived for training at 7 a.m. and remained until 6 or 7 p.m. Not only was I engaged in a deep immersion in cricket for the first time, but also in the Karnataka state culture and language. Karnataka is spelled K-A-R-N-A-T-A-K-A. Few of the women in the camp spoke English. Since I lacked the ability to communicate with body language, I quickly picked up my first words and phrases in the local language, Kannada. Although the coaches attempted to provide me with instructions in English, the language barrier made it challenging for me to pick up the sport. Nevertheless, I quickly fell in love with the feeling of playing on a team and building my skills as a cricketer. After I finished my week of group training, I transitioned into daily one-on-one coaching sessions with Lokesha Lokai, one of India's longtime national players of blind cricket. All day, every day, 6 days a week, Lokai trained me alongside Kavya, a state player for women's blind cricket. As I trained under Loki, I was preparing myself to bring my new skills back to the United States and to pass them on to others. The rules of the game. Many people like to compare cricket to baseball. The truth is that baseball was developed based on cricket, and it carries many similarities. Rather than running to bases, cricketers run between two base-like structures known as wickets. There are two wickets on the cricket field, positioned on opposite sides of the pitch. The batsman stands next to one wicket, while the bowler stands across from them at the opposite wicket. Once the bowler throws the ball toward the batsman will strike the ball before running across the pitch to the bowler's wicket to score one run. Meanwhile, members of the bowler's team, known as fielders, are spread throughout the field. Once the batsman strikes the ball and begins running, the fielders must retrieve the ball. The fielders attempt to get the ball to the wicket before the batsman finishes running. If they can beat the batsman to the wicket with the ball, the batsman will be out and another will replace them on the pitch. One team will bat exclusively for the first half of the game, while the opposing team will exclusively bowl and field. Halfway through the game, their positions will reverse. The team that was originally batting will begin bowling and fielding, while the bowling team takes up the batting. At the end, whichever team scores the most runs is the winner. One of my favorite things about blind cricket is that very few adaptations have to be made from the mainstream sport. The major adaptation is the ball, which is a hard leather ball in mainstream cricket. For blind cricket, a hard plastic ball was developed filled with metal ball bearings as a non-electronic auditory adaptation. Aside from this, all of the equipment in the sport is the same as that of mainstream cricket. The other two primary adaptations made for blind cricket are the batting and bowling styles. In mainstream cricket, the ball is thrown overhand, bouncing on the ground just before it reaches the batsman. In blind cricket, we throw the ball underhand, much like regular bowling style, so that the ball makes a clear sound when it rolls toward the batsman. Due to this adaptation, the batsman may choose to stand and bat like a mainstream cricketer, or they can lean down and sweep the entire length of the bat against the ground in a powerful sweep shot. Apart from these three primary adaptations, blind cricket is very similar to the mainstream sport. Often people watching blind cricket don't even realize that the game has been adapted into a blind sport. I cannot count the times people have mistaken me for a sighted cricketer. When they find out that I'm playing blind cricket, they're completely perplexed. Bringing it all back home. Once I had learned the basics of blind cricket, it was time to take the game back to America. However, I was very reluctant to leave India. After just 1 month soaking up Indian culture, I came to see my new community as family, and I was addicted to playing cricket every day. My only consolation was that my brother and I would be working to build blind cricket from the ground up in the U.S. It was a daunting task, but teaching is a passion for both of us. The challenge of establishing a national sport was exciting and empowering. I wish I could say that the U.S. blind community welcomed cricket with open arms. The truth is that it took time and extended exposure to build interest in the sport. Many people had never heard of mainstream cricket, let alone blind cricket, and at first they were hesitant to try a new sport. The first step was to begin the exposure process, showering the blind community with information about blind cricket. During November and December 2024 and January 2025, Drew and I focused solely upon online outreach. From NFB email lists to blind sports networks, we blasted the community with news of our intention to start national men's and women's blind cricket teams. Although it took time for interest to build, once it was there, Drew and I found ourselves in a whirlwind of excitement. We were bombarded with requests for us to provide in-person demonstrations. By the end of January, our calendar was completely booked up through May, and we had 15 clinics scheduled in 8 states. We traveled to schools for the blind, such as Perkins, the New York Institute for Special Education, and the Maryland School for the Blind, where we held all-day clinics with the students. The focus of these clinics was to introduce the youth to a new sport and to teach them the basic skills of the game. Most importantly, our goal was to give the students a good time. I'd say this effort was a definite success, as the students at many of these schools are still asking for more cricket. In addition to teaching at schools for the blind, Drew and I traveled to adult training centers, such as Savvy Services in Arizona, that's spelled S-A-A-V-I, and the Louisiana Center for the Blind. We traveled to state conventions and blindness-centered events, where we spread the word about blind cricket and invited people to join us on our journey toward forming the national men's and women's teams. Building the spirit, creating a team. It's hard to believe that in November 2024, blind cricket was largely unknown in the U.S. Now, in the summer of 2025, we just finished our first national training camps for the first U.S. women's team. Often, Drew and I feel like proud parents. We have breathed life into this project, and now we've watched the birth of a new sport in the U.S. Soon we will see the impact that it's having on the lives of our players. No feeling can compare to this. Not only will the game shape me as a person, but it will affect those who have taken the initiative to jump into a new sport and give it their everything. In the second half of June 2025, 24 women traveled from 11 states to attend our first two national training camps for women's blind cricket. 12 players trained for 3 days in New York. The other 12 traveled to California the following week for their own 3-day camp. Throughout this journey, there have been many magical moments for me, but nothing compares to the experience of seeing 24 women come together to take on a completely new challenge. During clinics, I only worked with players for a few hours at most, but during these camps, I spent 3 days with the women and got to know each of them as we learned and played together. The magic of these camps came from the way women interacted with each other and with the sport itself. I watched them build each other up and bring the absolute best out of one another. Any activity has the power to bring people together and to change lives, but never have I witnessed this phenomenon so closely before. I have seen these players restructure their lives around cricket and each other to build a strong, resilient team of incredible women. With this achievement under their belts, the women who have been selected to progress through the program will attend an intensive 8-day training camp from July 26th to August 3rd. During this camp, the women dive more deeply into cricket, learning the intricacies of the sport. At the conclusion of camp, the top 17 players were selected as our very first National Women's Blind Cricket team. Rather than easing into their role as international athletes, these players jumped straight into the World Cup competition in November of 2025. With only a few months of training to prepare, these dedicated athletes will travel to India and Nepal for 1 month to make history in the first ever World Cup for Women's Blind Cricket. Although the United States has lagged behind other nations in mainstream cricket, we are right up at the top for blind cricket. We are right on time to compete in this historic event. It's hard to believe that there was almost no interest in blind cricket back in November of 2024. Now, exactly 1 year later, the U.S. will compete for the World Cup. This remarkable feat is a reflection of the strength, passion, and tenacity of our U.S. athletes. They have embraced change and joined forces to create something new and beautiful. Someone always has to be the first to take a step toward change and progress to inspire others. These athletes will inspire generations to come to embrace change and dive wholeheartedly into new adventures. If you take only one thing away from this article, I hope you are as inspired as I am by these women. I hope to see you cheering the U.S. National Women's Blind Cricket Team during the World Cup this November. From FightingBlindness.org, Dateline September 17th, Give Kids a Chance, Reauthorizing a Lifeline for Children's Vision. The House Energy and Commerce Committee is considering H.R. 1262, the Give Kids a Chance Act, which would reauthorize the Rare Pediatric Disease Priority Review Voucher, PRV, program. Today, the House Energy and Commerce Committee is considering H.R. 1262, the Give Kids a Chance Act, which would reauthorize the Rare Pediatric Disease Priority Review Voucher Program, a taxpayer-neutral incentive that helps feed treatments for rare childhood conditions, including inherited retinal diseases, IRDs. Why it matters. Many IRDs begin in childhood and progress over time. Each year without treatments can mean irreversible vision loss. The PRV program helps attract private investment to small patient populations with high R&D costs, while maintaining FDA efficacy and safety standards. The program does not require taxpayer funding and has helped bring more rare pediatric therapies to the FDA for review. Our ask? We urge members of the committee to advance H.R. 1262 and restore this critical incentive for kids' health. Take action. Constituents can contact the representative's office to voice support. I've run out of time for this week's Vision News already. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org.